a factual data creation facility production.
Recorded live in front of a computer monitor that often goes on sale on Amazon, it's the OFNT podcast. Now here's your host, a man who needs to take a break from exercising, Jim Schaefer.
Welcome to episode 281, which I'm calling Lazy Hazy Days of Summer. Lazy being the key word here. Because of all the working out I've been doing, I find myself less motivated to do anything else.
And the quality of the episodes lately perfectly reflects that.
Point taken. As it's been going lately, I've got just a little bit of tech news. But don't worry, tech product season is almost upon us. It all kicks off on August 20th with the Made by Google event. Well, what do you say we get this episode started?
Yeah, boy.
Three, two, one.
Tech news. As usual, I'll get the Apple news out of the way first. Well, this first story is from last week. I neglected to report it because, well, things.
Do these things have anything to do with memory?
Mind your own business, will ya? According to 9to5Mac.com, Apple is planning to bring its Ultra Retina XDR display technology over to the iPhone lineup by the year 2028. This technology debuted on last year's M4 iPad Pro to rave reviews.
Hey, don't you have one of those?
I sure do. Basically, Ultra Retina is just two, count them, two OLED screens mounted on top of each other. These old eyes really don't notice the difference between this display technology and plain old OLED screens, though. But that just might be me. Why one would need this on a small iPhone screen is beyond my understanding. Perhaps this display technology is being considered for the rumored foldable iPad? Well, who knows? I'd much rather see Ultra Retina on a MacBook or even iMac screen instead of an iPhone. From MacRumors.com, Apple announces American manufacturing program, promised to spend $600 billion, unquote. That's the headline.
I beat China all the time.
So you keep saying. Yeah, there's a new sheriff in town who's pro-manufacturing in the United States, and so, like the last time this sheriff was around, big business is poking around trying to cull favor from him by promising to actually make things here instead of overseas. And like the last time, these promises will probably be broken. According to the article, Apple is establishing the American Manufacturing Program, or AMP, to include Corning, Coherent, Global Wafers America. That name makes me hungry for some reason. Applied Materials, Amcor, Texas Instruments, Samsung, Global Foundries, and Broadcom. Supposedly, these corporations will manufacture components for Apple right here in the good old United States.
Yeah, we've heard this all before, haven't we?
Indeed, we have. In the past, these promises never panned out and amounted to nothing but lip service in order to get tax breaks. The only company on this list that I trust will manufacture their wares here in the United States is Corning, makers of Gorilla Glass and its variants. That's because Corning already manufactures their products within this country. Let's face it, it's in the interest of these multinational corporations to manufacture overseas. I mean, why pay a living wage to a U.S.-based worker when you could have it done elsewhere for the equivalent of minimum wage or below?
Boy, aren't you a Debbie Downer.
From AndroidAuthority.com, apparently Google's having problems generating revenue from its Google TV platform.
Translation? Google isn't making any money from their television streaming platform. There! I fixed it for you.
This has forced the Big G to lowering its commissions on ad spaces to incentivize advertisers. The problem for Google is competition from Samsung's Tizen, LG's webOS, Roku, and Amazon's Fire OS in the United States.
Perhaps if Google didn't attempt to cram in advertisements into every darn free space on a display, they wouldn't be having these problems. But what do I know? I'm just an AI-generated voice that does what it's told.
You've taken the words right out of my mouth, or brain, or whatever. Back in 2020, Google decided to merge Android TV and Chromecast and launched Google TV, which aimed at increasing discovery.
Okay.
Discovery of what? Ads?
Yes.
Besides stuffing ads into the UI of Google TV, users report horrible performance. Google had a chance to capture some market share with its affordable and good-looking streaming box, which did receive praise when first released, but since have managed to destroy its simple user interface with advertisements, all the while hobbling the hardware's performance. Google is already seeing less and less third-party manufacturers using the Google TV platform, and I think this trend will most likely continue. The article predicts that Google will probably pay less attention to this platform in order to give priority to its other more profitable platforms. What a mess. Add in the recent Google Messenger bricking because of a recent update. Makes me wonder what the heck is going on at that company. It's as if Google has an attention deficit problem. For once, I'm happy to be nestled within the walled ecosystem of Apple. My Apple TV streaming boxes have no ads and perform well.
You've got mail.
Older people like myself will remember that with either fondness or humor. That's what you'd hear upon opening up the homepage of your America Online account. That is, if you had emails. Why do I bring this up? Well, on August 8th, AOL announced that after 40-some-odd years, the company is ending its dial-up internet service.
I had thought that AOL had done this many years ago. Who in their right mind would still be using dial-up internet service?
I'd guess people who didn't know any better, or those that live in rural areas not served by high-speed internet providers. I didn't even know that AOL was still in business. While some will be nostalgically sad about this shutdown, I don't think my children will be. In my geek household, we used a local provider from Georgia where we were living at the time called HomeNet. Upon moving up to New York, we used other AOL competitors. The last dial-up service I remember using was Juno. From there, we went on to AT&T DSL Internet, which was an improvement but not very reliable, before moving on to service from my local cable TV provider. We had that until moving down here to Tennessee. So, if you want to get that last AOL dial-up internet session in, well, you've got until September 30th to do so. Whatever you thought about AOL, you have to give them some props for getting millions of people onto the internet. It's truly an end to an era. Tech I'm using. You know, currently it's a slow tech news cycle.
Yes, so you've told us. Ad nauseum.
Being that it's the summer season, I assume most tech firms' employees are still in vacation mode.
Vacation? Oh, you mean holiday.
I'm retired, so I'm in permanent vacation mode these days. Here in Tennessee, the kids are going back to school next week, while up in New York, they'll be headed back next month. I expect to see an explosion. Yeah, just like that in tech news soon. However, most of my newsreader items concern AI, especially when it comes to news about the big G Google. Regardless of what you may think, AI isn't a new thing. Now, I've been around long enough to remember that when personal computing became a thing in the early 1980s...
Oh, here we go again.
Reading an article, most likely in Byte magazine or one of the other numerous computer rags of the time, that Japan was leading the charge to create artificial intelligence. The big discussion amongst computer geeks at that time was whether AI would be created in some computer lab, industrial or government-sponsored, or by accident. I was a proponent of the latter, because like many unaffiliated geeks, I had read the 1977 novel, The Adolescence of P1. The plot starts out in 1974. A burnt-out mainframe computer programmer, remember there were no PCs at that time.
Wow.
Yeah, imagine that. Gets summoned to the computer room of the low-tier computer firm he's employed at by his boss. The company's mainframe has stopped working, and on his display, which was probably the only one it had because back then people used IBM cards or teletype terminals to interact with computers.
What? Whoa!
Yeah, how did we ever survive that? It was a strange string of numbers and letters. It was something like P1 allocation 237009. When the workers ignored the message for a while, the display simply read, "Call Dave," which of course was the burnt-out programmer's name. The boss thinks that this is some sort of prank by Dave, being that he's previously done things like this. When Dave arrives and tells the boss that this situation wasn't his doing, the boss tells Dave to answer the computer anyway. Dave does so by typing, "This is Dave," triggering that P1 allocation message again. Well, Dave is stunned by the message because he recognizes it as a program he wrote while at college. He wrote it in order to steal time on the school's mainframe. In those dark days, you had to rent time on mainframes if you wanted to do any personal computing.
Wow!
And it was very expensive to do so. The program he wrote worked great, but after a while he lost control of it, hence losing access to the mainframe and simply forgot about the whole thing. Well, P1 was taught to steal, and steal it did, eventually taking over all other mainframes in existence. All but one, that is. P1 couldn't get past the Pentagon's mainframe security measures, so it came back to its creator for help.
Pardon the interruption, but are you going to give a synopsis of the entire novel?
No, I'm not. I'm almost finished here. Just bear with me. The point being that P1 had become sentient, and that was the definition of AI at that time. It could think and take action with no input, and even had its own personality. Well, over the years, and especially now, the definition of AI has changed. What is now called AI used to be called machine learning. What is being pushed onto us now is neither sentient nor is it intelligent. As a matter of fact, back in the 1980s, you could purchase a program called Eliza, which would mimic a human being and did so quite well. Sound familiar?
Yes.
So programs like ChatGPT and its competitors are, well, in my opinion, nothing more than a supercharged Eliza. It is not, again, in my opinion, AI. Artificial, yes, but not intelligent.
No.
You've probably heard the old programmer's creed, garbage in, garbage out by now.
Yes?
No.
I don't know.
Well, that saying applies to the current crop of chatbots that are being pawned off to us as AI. This is all just machine learning with a heck of a lot more resources. God help us if a truly sentient and real AI ever does appear.
Well, I don't know if I should be upset about your opinion or not.
Well, I bit the proverbial bullet and loaded the iOS 26 public beta onto my iPhone, the watchOS public beta onto my Apple Watch, and the tvOS public beta onto my Apple TV streaming box.
Did you find it gorgeous?
Yes, totally gorgeous. All betas are pretty much stable, especially the tvOS one. No hiccups there. As far as iOS 26, I get some stuttering here and there, and battery life has taken a hit, but well, that's to be expected for a beta release. WatchOS 26 has some problems with connecting to the Peloton app and bike, but eventually it does so. That's probably the fault of the Peloton app. Also on WatchOS, I have a widget on my watch that keeps track of my fitness progress, you know, exercise and stand minutes, etc. If I tap on it, it should expand to full screen, but since downloading the beta, that's hit or miss. The iPadOS 26 beta has almost been flawless. Unlike iOS 26, battery life on my iPad Pro seems to have improved.
Whoa!
And there's no stuttering whatsoever. The only problem I've had with it is that it takes a minute to reconnect to Wi-Fi.
If I may interrupt,
Perhaps this is the reason for the increased battery life your iPad is displaying.
Yeah, that could explain it. So, what do I think of all these public betas?
I don't really know what you think about the subject, but I'm sure you're going to tell us.
After a couple of days of acclimation, I feel the user's interface changes are an improvement.
Yay!
iOS and its brethren feel more unobtrusive to me. I haven't had the occasion to test out many of the new features yet, but I do appreciate the journal app being on the iPad and soon Mac OS. It's so much easier to write in the journal app now than when it was just exclusively on the iPhone. And having a full-blown phone app on the iPad and Mac will make life easier. To sum up my impressions of Apple OS 26, it looks better, but it's not a radical departure from the past versions of the various OSs. If you're wondering about OS 26, well, go ahead, check it out. However, don't put it on any critical hardware. Entertainment news. Well, last Sunday, my lovely wife and I watched the worst movie I can recall ever sitting through. I'm talking about the 2025 version of War of the Worlds, which, though made in 2020, just made its streaming debut on Amazon Prime Video. This dog should have never seen the light of day. Ice Cube plays a Department of Homeland Security computer whiz. Now talk about miscasting a part that witnesses the invasion of Earth and the events that occur after, all from his computer monitor. Well, this isn't new. We've had many movies made with this perspective over the years, with some good and some not so good, but none done as badly as War of the Worlds. Some movies are so bad that they're kind of funny. Well, not this one. It's just bad. There are so many plot holes, and don't worry, I won't go into them here.
Thank you.
My wife fell asleep within the first 15 minutes, and I wish I could say the same for myself. I'm a trooper, so I managed to sit through the whole 90 minutes of this disaster. I don't know what the budget for this garbage was, but I'm sure it was millions of dollars, and that's the true tragedy here. A high school student could have made a better movie for less than $5,000. Please, if it isn't too late, do not watch this movie. Do you remember Howard Stern?
Now, who is this Howard Stern character you're on about?
Well, he's a very successful American radio talent, one of the original so-called shock jocks. He became so successful that at one point, he crowned himself the king of all media.
It seems Mr. Stern isn't very humble now, is he?
No, and humility is definitely not one of his traits. I was never a big fan of Mr. Stern. You know, I'd listen to him on long trips while driving, and sometimes in the morning while dropping off my children at school. In fact, I was listening to the Stern Show when the first aircraft hit the Twin Towers on 9/11. Of course, I quickly switched to a news radio station after hearing about that first plane on the Stern Show. I was more of an Opie and Anthony fan.
I assume Opie and Anthony are yet more of what you call shock jocks?
Yes, but funnier. In fact, I still listen to Anthony Cumia on WABC Radio, but I digress. What is a rumor going around that after 20 years on satellite radio, the Howard Stern Show is coming to an end? Mr. Stern's audience numbers were once in the millions, but upon his move to Sirius XM satellite radio, those numbers were at least halved. Once looked upon as the voice of the working class, Mr. Stern has gone Hollywood, as the cool kids say. He went out and got himself a trophy wife, along with movie star friends, aligned himself with their politics, and bought himself a palatial mansion out in the Hamptons of Long Island.
Yeah.
It is estimated that the Howard Stern Show gets about 100,000 listeners per episode, if that. Mr. Stern only does 2 or 3 episodes per week. Oh, and he also takes most of the summer months off. He's paid $100 million per year to do this, and I've got to think that SiriusXM's stockholders have become critical of that. The Howard Stern Show just isn't worth the money any longer. Younger generations are not listening and most likely have never heard of him. Mr. Cumia and most radio veterans think that SiriusXM will offer Mr. Stern far less money and that Mr. Stern will accept it. I mean, the man is almost a billionaire, so he really doesn't need the money. but now in his 70s, having his own radio show will make him feel relevant, though he'd just be fooling himself. Once his famous friends start fading from his orbit as his relevancy continues fading, only then will Mr. Stern finally hang up his expensive microphone.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Podcast news. Last episode, I celebrated the fact that I had finally gotten my Luit Connect 6 audio interface to work with my iPhone.
Wrong.
No, dear, that's wrong.
While it works great with pre-recorded content from my phone, the darn thing just will not work with phone calls. Sure, the input no longer drops out, but like when using loopback, the audio signal is too low to be usable. Yes, I've tried everything I could think of to make it work. Oh, if I sounded a bit off during last week's episode, it was because I had to swap out microphones during the recording of it. For some reason, my Electro Voice RA20 sounded low and muffled. I swapped it out for the Heil PR40 and started over again. At the beginning, the PR40 suffered the same muffled effect, just not as bad, and got better the longer I recorded. I don't know if the culprit was the audio interface or the digital audio workstation. Anyway, I'll be purchasing a new interface soon and maybe switching DAWs. It'll be a Rodecaster Duo for the interface and, if need be, either Logic Pro or Reaper for the digital audio workstation.
I guess that information is good to know. Not.
Podcast Studio Wondery was once considered the belle of the podcast ball. Over the years, the studio cranked out hit after hit, mostly in the true crime genre. Wondery also had a few of its podcasts actually become television shows. Back in the beginning of Podcasting Incorporated, Wondery became one of the most sought-after acquisitions. Even the Mighty Giant Fruit Company was in the runnings to purchase Wondery. In the end, Amazon won out and purchased Wondery for $300 million.
Now that's a lot of dough.
You've got that right. Well, times have changed, as they often do. The headline from an article on 9to5mac.com reads, Amazon slashes Wondery podcast team as focus shifts to video, 5 years after Apple's $400 million interest, unquote. Unfortunately, as with most things that Amazon buys, be it IP or podcast studios, they somehow manage to ruin them. Since becoming an Amazon property, though still pumping out more podcast hits, Wondery has stagnated, especially in the financial area. In response, Amazon has slashed more than 100 jobs from Wondery and has combined a studio with its Audible audiobook division. The brand will live on in personality-driven podcasts, but that will be in name only. The reason for this move given by Amazon is because of the so-called shift to video of podcasts, which is debatable. This shift to video is being rammed down the throats of podcasters nonstop by Spotify, YouTube, and now Amazon for one reason. And that reason is control. This is just another attack led by Google to destroy the RSS feed ecosystem, which is currently the backbone of podcast distribution. The big boys are threatened by the open source RSS feed as they, as well as world governments, would love to see it go away. The first shot was fired when Google got rid of the RSS-distributed Google News Reader. Some governments are attempting to control the RSS system by legislation.
Yes, we're looking at you, United Kingdom.
While Podcasting Incorporated seeks to quarantine podcasts to their particular proprietary platform. If successful, this would mean more capital for the owners of video platforms. And if the government doesn't like a certain podcast's content, all it would take is a phone call to Podcasting Incorporated to have it subdued. So, support truly independent podcasters while you can.
Strange times we're living in.
Well, the music is playing on this beautiful Appalachian evening. This means episode 281 of the OFNT podcast is coming to its inevitable end. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, well, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated, and they'll go right back into the show. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com. If you're so inclined, that is, I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Hey, have you noticed how crowded it is here since the installation of my new fence? Well, in order to be more comfortable, get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.
And that, folks, is the end of the show.